On this week's episode of The Freenoter, we look at actionable takeaways. Conferences want them, so how do you provide them?
We're going to look at the work of Brian Fanzo, who teaches us to push the, I'm going to say darn button, so that we don't have to slap an E rating on this podcast.
And we'll make a wonderful cocktail, the paper plane, so you can write down all those actionable takeaways.
All that and more on this week's episode of The Freenoter. Well, it's actionable takeaway week.
Yes. Well, and don't we always talk in actionable takeaways?
Yes, we do.
Always all about actionable takeaways?
And here are three things to do right after you listen to this podcast.
Yes.
Number one, make the darn cocktail.
Make the darn cocktail.
That we're going to teach you
later.
No, the actionable takeaway, I have to tell you, get a little full of myself. When I start to, you know, read my own press clippings and I get to a point where I'm applying to speak at a conference, and I get to that box in the application that says, list three things your audience will be able to do when they leave your conference. Sometimes I just get uppity about that.
Why do you get uppity about that?
Well, because I have a giant ego. Like, is my speech not enough? Is not 40 minutes in my presence enough to warm the cockles of their heart?
No, because these are meeting professionals and conference organizers that are having to make a decision about what they think their attendees are going to find useful. And if there isn't anything obviously useful about your talk, that, you know, because they know that those folks are having to go back and using that spreadsheet we gave folks last time or not, having to prove out that this was a worthwhile expenditure of their time and money to go to. So I get it, because it at the very least, it makes the organizers happy because it helps them get a better sense of what your talk's actually about. And by the way, that also helps people figure out what your talk is about, you know, potential attendees at your talk. And isn't that what we want? We want them to come. We want them to see what they're going to get. And we want them to want that. And we want them to tell other people.
Okay, fine. You're right this time.
This time.
Well, this topic, though, and any event or meeting planner, they're always going to want you to list what are the actionable takeaways. And they are, in fact, that's not a superfluous, you know, box to tick. They have a constituency. They have the people in their company, or they have their attendees, and they have needs. They have problems. They have things that they're looking to get. And so the great meeting planners are trying to map what it is that you promise you're going to equip people to do with what it is those people either need or want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the secret to figuring out actionable takeaways is you actually have to know what the big idea of the talk is first. And I think that that's a mistake I often see with freenoters, mostly because it's so tempting. And we've talked about this before, to create a talk that's only actionable takeaways, because it feels like, well, that if they want actionable takeaways, then I'm just going to put them all in there. But for reasons that we've talked about before, if you give people all of those things to do, then they oftentimes will remember none of them. It looks impressive when they bring it back to the office, but it either feels overwhelming to them, or it's just they're just not going to do any of them, because they're just like, I don't even know where to start. Even if you told them where to start, it's just too many things.
So here's my big question for you, though, and I want to hearken back. Shall we hearken?
Let's hearken.
We're gonna hearken back.
Don't we have music for that?
We will in post. I will take care of that. I want to hearken back to a very early episode where we talked about the three kinds of talks. We talked about the why talks, the what now talks, and the how talks. You know, and the how talk might be, all right, you've convinced me. I need to communicate better. I need to communicate better with email. I'm sold on doing something specific with email. I'm going to your how talk of 50 ways to use the BCC for good and not evil. Those are actionable takeaways.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and even for the what now talk, and I give a lot of what now talks, I sort of get the actionable takeaways from that. And it might, you know, some of those might just be, here's a specific way to look for more information about this, or here's a specific way to get better at this particular thing. But the why talk, the provenance of so many, you know, keynotes and kind of motivational talks and things like that, you know, if you've just gone to see like a sort of fiery motivational speaker, like what's the actionable takeaway besides sell everything you own, give it to charity, hop in a car and drive it into the sun? Like, what else are you supposed to do?
Well, generally, a dyed-in-the-wool motivational speaker is not going to be a freenoter. but I get your point about like, how do you come up with an actionable takeaway from a keynote? I come back to the point where you really need to know what the one big idea of your talk is all about. And I have ranted in my newsletter and on my blog about how I am hugely not a fan of the 3-point structure of a talk. And the quick version of that is because A, you could have three things that are only loosely related except by topic. B, creates no narrative arc. And C, it's lazy because oftentimes it's how people shorten their talks. They just drop out one of the points. Why was it there in the first place? But when it comes to understanding, okay, what is the big idea of your talk? And what I mean by the big idea of your talk is, what is the unexpected, unfamiliar answer to something that your audience currently wants? So we've talked before about how we need to establish what question your talk answers for them. You need to have an unexpected or unfamiliar answer to that. It needs to be a singular answer. I'm a big fan of that. I don't think you can. That's one of the reasons. Another reason why I don't like the 3-point structure. You can't say, here are three answers to your question. They really need to be able to walk out with just one. And even if you have three action, quote unquote, actionable takeaways, they need to support that. But you asked me specifically, like, what would a takeaway of a Y type keynote be? I think it's useful to actually start to think of it through the lens of, well, how would you write it? So one of the first things that I often will suggest people do, and I do this for myself as well, is before, like when I'm creating a talk in the first place, I do write down what my objective of the talk is. And it isn't not just the one that I want people to, you know, hire me or go, you know, do the next step and the things that we've talked about before, but I write it down, by the end of this talk, the audience should be able to. And I identify one big thing because that allows me to say, okay, even if I'm giving a Y-type talk, like my getting the green light talk, for instance, I'm going to identify that and say, by the end of this talk, the audience will be able to identify two separate approaches to driving action from their audience and determine which one they're company currently adopts. Like that is an actionable takeaway from that, because I'm basically setting up kind of, here's one way, here's another way. And that's the overarching objective of that talk. Now, if I have to write that talk for other, if I have to write that talk for and write those actionable takeaways for, and get three of them, then I mean, I can tell you what those three are. What I have is, one, analyze your ideas for the red lights that lead to no, because I know one of the things that I talk about in that talk is what creates red lights in the first place. Two, identify three key concepts every piece of content needs to get a yes, and know how to find them in your own. And organize your content so it feels like a story, even if it isn't one, and keeps your client hanging on every word. So you can still talk about high-level things, but it really does require, you have to understand what is it you're trying to get them to do in the first place. And have done the work of thinking through, okay, well, if I know what that big shift in thinking is, so in the getting the green light talk for me, that's shifting towards making sure that you are trying to relieve the pain of the decision-making process instead of introducing it. That's the big idea of the talk. And what I did from there was figure out, okay, what are the things that will make that change concrete? So I think that's one of the first things to think about when you're thinking about, well, what could the actionable takeaways of this talk be? One of the first places to look is, how can I make that shift in thinking concrete for them? I tend to think of it in three different ways. When I'm working with clients on this, we usually talk through three different options. One is process. The second is what I call criteria. And the third one is categories. Process being pretty simple. So if I'm saying, how do you get the green light? It would be, well, step one, you do this. Step two, you do this. Step three, you do this. You know, you figure out what do they already want. You figure out what do they already believe. And you figure out what can you give them that validates both. How can you position your new information in a way that validates both? That's a 1-2-3-step process. So I'll get to the other two in just a minute. But I mean, there must be times when you're speaking. I mean, you've talked about before about, you know, hey, I give keynotes. I don't give actionable takeaways, but there must be times when you talk either about the process other people could take or the process that you have taken as a way of showing people that there's a way to do this for themselves as well.
You know, if you talk to a great method actor, and that method actor might have 5 or 6 lines in a given scene, or maybe even in a whole movie. But the great ones of that school, let's say, have a whole backstory, right? Mm. They have, like, they know where that character went to college. They know why they broke up with their first boyfriend or girlfriend. None of that is in the script, right? But they do all of that so that when they step out on stage and say, you know, but that's my brooch, that there's a congruency between that statement, that action, and everything that defines the fabric of that character.
Brooch?
Yes.
Sorry.
That's my brooch.
Okay. Yes, and?
Yes, and. Oh, thank you for that. And I think, you know, that's what actually going through the entire process from soup to nuts of, now I used, you know, I've talked before how I sat in the back room and did a whole red thread for one of my really important talks that goes all the way from like the goal of the audience to those concrete tactical steps. And I don't give all of those in the same talk, right?
Right.
I could stop short at sort of the big idea, and that's my why talk. I can go forward into what's the change I want them to conceptualize, and that's my what now talk.
Yep.
And here's what you do at your desk next week. That's my how talk. But I can't do that unless I've gone through the whole thing. And I know that sounds daunting. It's not. And what that leaves you with is a congruency. And even if you are giving a what now talk, you are equipped at a moment's notice when someone asks, okay, yeah, well, how do I do that? I can rattle them off. And I'd like to, if I may, I just want to just like give sort of the kind of red thread statements. And we've talked about this goal, problem, truth, change, and actions. There's a market research talk I give, and I've given it at all three of those levels. And the way I scripted it out was, as B2B marketers, we all want to create content that makes our product and message stand out. And that's the goal that we can, I think, all agree on.
How can I make my message stand out?
Yep. Exactly. How can I? So I think we can agree on that goal. While there are barriers to achieving that, the real problem is we think our job is to be a bullhorn facing outwards, the voice of the product. But in reality, our primary goal is to be a bullhorn pointed inwards, to be the voice of the customer inside the company.
Right. And that's your problem pair, your duck bunny.
That's my duck bunny, right? And to solve that problem, we have to understand that marketing's reason for being is the very soul of the company, to profitably delight a customer. And that's sort of the big idea.
Yeah, that's the truth at the core.
That's the truth at the core.
Kind of the big insight that makes inaction impossible, as I like to say.
Exactly. And if I'm giving like a broad concept keynote, I can stop there, but I am equipped to go further. And so then I get to kind of my change. To achieve our goal, we need to understand what makes them delighted by valuing hearing from customers more than talking to them. And that may be where I end a what now talk.
Well, I would say that every talk should go through at least the change. So yeah. I would say, and the difference between, and we haven't done our show yet on kind of on structure and,
no.
and order and those kinds of things. But really, I think that all talks should have all of those points, at least through the change. But the difference between a why talk and a what now talk is just really proportion.
Yeah. And so I end it with, you know, how do we do that? By doing the work to understanding the whys of your customers before you look at their whats, understand what makes your customers different from each other before you reduce them to their commonalities, and to make all of that data known to everyone in the company every day. And if I want, I can take those three and I can break them down even more.
Right. Yeah. And you can look at it through that lens of process too, because you and I have actually shared the stage and given a joint talk on how to do this. And you've got a process with starting with qualitative, then going to quantitative, then going back to qualitative, just as you're refining the insights and finding more things. So I know you've got a process that way. The second thing that I suggest to people, and I certainly do this for myself, that you brainstorm.
You mush mind.
The second thing I recommend people do and brainstorm in addition to process is what I would call criteria. And those are three things that must be present and must be in play in order for that change to take effect, but they don't have to necessarily happen in that order. And I would say the three that you just listed out for yours fall into that criteria category, you know, of saying, okay, these are three things that you need to happen in order to hear more than you speak to. But you're not saying you need to do one, then two, then three.
No.
Right. And then the third thing that I suggest you brainstorm is what I call categories, which is different places that a change can be applied. And I think that by and large, it's the categories and the criteria that are most often there in keynote level why type talks. And what I mean by category and different places that could be applied would be if I were Neen James is famous for this. We've mentioned her before about talking about, you know, when she talks about systems of attention, she talks about it at the personal, at the local and the global level, right? Then so those are categories. Those are three different ways it could be applied. And even in a keynote, she's showing people what it looks like, right? So the actual takeaway that she could write is, and you'll be able to see how systems of attention work at three different levels, you know, or the three different levels that are most important in your day-to-day success, right? Something like that. And as you may have picked up, like you can mix and match these things too. You can say, if I'm talking about the red thread, for instance, and I'm doing it at a keynote level, I can say, here's what it sounds like, you know, as here's what the core red thread is. Now, if you're going to use it for marketing, here's what it sounds like. If you're using it in a sales conversation, here's what it sounds like. If you're using it in a pitch, here's what it sounds like. And so that's that high level categorization of how something can look. And I think if you do that brainstorming and you've done that thinking through those steps that we've talked about before, what is the audience goal? What's that problem of perspective that's getting in the way? What's that truth that makes an action impossible? What's that single high level shift in thinking or behavior that you're looking for? Then you have a rich, rich well of things to draw from to actually write those actionable takeaways, no matter what kind of talk it is.
So you and I have both filled out our fair share of speaking proposals and, you know, forms from different conferences to speak. And when you get to that box that you have to fill in, what are, you know, list three, and it's always three, isn't it?
It's three to five usually.
Yeah. List three actionable takeaways. What kind of language do you use? Like what are the sources you use for kind of, I guess, vibrant, active language?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I do is no matter how they've asked it, I always answer it with this phrase. And you used it before, but it's not usually how they ask for it. But the phrase that I use is, after this session, the audience will be able to. And the reason I do that is because when I'm either writing it for myself or I'm working with clients on this, it makes it less likely they're going to answer that with understand. And for me, Understanding is not an actionable takeaway. You have to actually do something with that. So I was lucky enough, probably 2 years ago now, I was speaking up in Calgary, I believe it was. And there was a wonderful woman in the audience named Susan Carlton, who has a master's in education, and she knows learning design and learning theory. And she was kind enough afterwards to say, hey, I love your content. And in a very constructive way, here's a way that you could make it even better. And she introduced me to something well known to educators, but something called Bloom's Taxonomy. And it's a different levels of and different words that are associated with the different levels of learning. So they're grouped into things like a category of knowledge, comprehension, application, analysis, synthesis, evaluation, physical skills, attitudes. And I honestly, and I've got the sheet right next to me, but I carry it with me all the time, this list of action verbs, and we'll link to it in the show notes. Because I use that every time. I use these words like identify, practice, illustrate, experiment, distinguish, formulate, organize. Just having those words help you start to think differently about what you're going to write. So that's the first thing I do is make sure that I'm always framing it from the perspective of what will the audience be able to do. And I ban the word understand from my answer.
Yeah, that is a great point.
Or if I do put understand in there, I immediately follow it with something else. So I'm just trying to find, I'm finding one that I, we talked through slides in a previous episode, and I had written that up as a potential session for the National Speakers Association conference. And one of the takeaways I had written for that was understand how three critical elements of attention affect your audience's ability to process, understand, and act on your message, and how to apply those elements to create compelling content. So I did say understand because I wanted to take that opportunity in the takeaway to add a little bit more information about the talk. But you notice I said, and how to apply. And I think that's the only time that you can do that. If you say understand and apply, or understand and contrast, or understand and predict, or any of those action words that come along with it.
And by the way, this week's episode of The Freenoter is brought to you by Bloom's taxonomy. Are you tired of other taxonomies?
You're funny.
Then try Bloom's taxonomy. Well, the reason why I, as a former former instructor of rhetoric and composition, that I like Bloom's taxonomy is that it's vigorous language.
It is, yes.
And as a writer, you should eschew non-vigorous verbs and and use vigorous language wherever possible. Yeah. And I'm reminded of a gentleman named Merlin Mann who once had a productivity site, I think, called 43 Folders, but he still does a podcast. And, you know, he's a very, very funny, erudite man. And I listened to him once sort of lampoon mission statements. And mission statements for companies are full of passive, dreadful, desiccated, ossifying, stultifying
language.
I spent
15 years of my life in nonprofits, and you want to talk about meaning. I used to do a talk where I put up three different mission statements without the
Yeah.
Without the institution attached to them. And I was like, which institution is this? And the funniest one is at the time I was working in higher ed. So there were, you know, I was putting them up as if they were all higher education. One of them was the Postal Service. And they were like, that must be Harvard. And I'm like, nope, it's the Postal Service.
Well, yeah, they are terrible. Like, yeah. We're committed to the dedication of commitment. and like, okay, all right, fine. Which one's a hospital and which one's Arby's? I'm lost.
Yeah.
And the Merlin Mann, when he was dissecting these, said, these are terrible mission statements. I'll give you a mission statement. Destroy all monsters. That's an effing mission statement. And so vigorous language, I think, is just to be the word nerd here, is what you want to opt for. And you're right. Passive verbs and things like understand are, anathema.
Yeah. I mean, so one of the things that I do is, I don't know if I mentioned this on our previous episodes about when we were talking about descriptions, is that I keep a running Evernote of all my talk and session descriptions, which now goes back. I don't know if I go all the way back. What's the first one that I have in here? Let me see. The very first one I have here. Oh, isn't that sweet? Find the red thread. But if I go back even further, oh, that's removed from website. So if I go actually to the bottom, oh, contents for Last Frontier, how to sell from the stage without selling from the stage, at least I'm consistent. So I do that because oftentimes I can recycle like great takeaways from one talk to another, because it's not that these talks are the same, but a lot of the concepts are the same. So just as an example, so I had to write, I've been working on this new talk, The Conversational Case, currently subtitled How to Script the Stories That Sell or Sell Ideas, depending on who I'm talking to. And predictably, I had a conference ask for the takeaways. And so I wrote them this way. I said, the high level description of the talk, like the one sentence, because someone asked me for that. And I'm like, I know how to do that. I said, this is how to capture customer attention with content that's consistent with your brand and messaging, yet customized for conversion. I was pretty proud of that one. Thought that was great. And you see, the reason I got that was because I had done the duck bunny. The consistency, consistent but customized, right? Like, that's the tension people are trying to resolve. And then I said, after this session, you'll be able to identify, which is one of my favorite first ones, by the way, identify three critical elements of attention that create compelling content. I know what those are, by the way, because I've already planned this. Again, you need to know what your talk is about. You don't have to have written it to write this, but you have to know what it's about. Second, capture those elements in your core story using a simple framework. And then third, adapt that story to multiple audiences and applications.
Just for people who, this may be their first episode, what is the duck bunny again?
Oh, sorry. So the duck bunny is what I use to describe what I call the problem pair, or the problem of perspective, which is what I find is consistently the most powerful way to introduce a problem that people don't know about that's getting in the way of something that they want. It's a really powerful way to set yourself up as a speaker and as a company, as a differentiator, because it's the first time you can say, hey, you've got this question about how you can, you know, stand out in the sea of noise with all these content channels that are out there. Most of the folks that are focusing on SEO are looking at how many channels you can be in, but we also have to remember that there's content flowing through them. So just like a pipe in a water. So the pipe, like that content and the channels, that tension is what I call the duck bunny. And we refer to it as the duck bunny because it's like that optical illusion there is an optical illusion called the rabbit duck illusion, where it's a duck and a bunny at the same time. It's kind of like the old woman, young woman, or the two faces in the vase.
Yeah. And the dress is blue.
That's right. Yes, exactly. It's like the blue, black, or the gold, white dress.
So I'm gonna ratchet up the difficulty here.
Okay.
On this podcast, in order to really achieve a 10 and stick the landing.
Okay.
We have been talking about actionable takeaways.
Yes.
What is the actionable takeaway of this podcast? So if someone has just listened to 30 minutes on actionable takeaways, they are going to go home, or maybe they're already home. Welcome home.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing I would say is they should be able to go back and look, analyze their own actionable takeaways for whether or not they meet the standards that we set. You may actually want to start with identify. Again, identify is a really good one to start with. Identify what makes an actionable takeaway actually actionable. Two, analyze your own takeaways for that actionability. And three, start experimenting with different ways to make their actual takeaways more powerful.
We're going to buy that.
Okay.
We're going to buy that.
I mean, that was like off the top of my head.
That was. I really put you on the spot. Well, I mean, that just means that you walk the talk, I think, of what you talk about. I think something that has helped me a lot, and this is more of an Uber takeaway or an umbrella takeaway, is not to start from your takeaways. Like, your takeaways should flow very easily from a well-formulated argument that comes from a well-articulated problem and truth and all of those things. The actions should be the easiest part of that. If you start from the actions and then try to like build some superstructure around them, it's a long hiding to nowhere.
Yeah. And I think the important thing to point out is that great actionable takeaways aren't just the actions that we were talking about before. I think remember this, it is often a way to add information about the content of your talk, particularly since increasingly they're limiting your word count. They don't usually limit the word count on the takeaways. Hint. Huh. So one of the things that I found is that you can slide things into those and into the actionable takeaways that you wouldn't necessarily do before, you know, wouldn't have gotten space for. So back to my getting the green light talk, for instance, one of the takeaways I've used in the past was identify the three key concepts every piece of content needs to get a yes and know how to find them in your own. And framing it that way does a couple things. So when I say identify the three key concepts every piece of content needs to get a yes, you see what I've done there? Our friend Clay Hebert would call it, I've opened a loop. I haven't told them what the three mm-hmm. concepts are, but I told them that there are three. And I've already told them that they'll know how to find them in their own. So you see, I kind of get this double piece. In order to be able to do that, I did another joint one like that where I snuck in additional information about my talk into the takeaways. Tie those concepts to the green lights your brand is built on, and connect your audiences more tightly to them too. So again, open loop. Okay. What are the green lights that your brand is built on? And so this allows you, if written thoughtfully and based on not just what the actions are, but actually what the talk is about, you can use those takeaways really powerfully. So I almost always, there's usually a takeaway that somehow identifies a little bit more about the problem pair or the duck bunny as we've been talking about it. There's usually something that addresses the model or the framework that I'm introducing in that. And then there's usually some way to kind of put it back into some other form of content. I mean, I love to be able to say, here's another, determine which current approaches to differentiation don't work and which ones will work for you. Apply a simple tool to reveal the unique way your organization does what it does. Organize your discoveries to tell the story of your differentiation in any format and at any length. So you see that those, they feel like actionable takeaways, and they are, and I will deliver on those in that talk, but I got them not because I had just figured out like what's my process or what's my, because I think that's where it gets hard to write those takeaways, because you're like, how do I talk about this three-step process three different ways? Mm. You don't. Your three-step process is one of your takeaways, but the other takeaways are some of the things that you're talking about that set up that three-step process.
I think what I am stuck on, you just blew my mind.
I love that I can still do that, baby.
You can still, you do that every day, baby. is that, because you're right, there are such like harsh character limits on all of these speaking submission forms that there isn't one on the takeaway.
There's never one on the takeaway.
You just blew my mind. I'm now like going through the in this talk, attendees will learn from Tom Webster, who was born in a small town in Maine. And 3 degrees and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's 25 years.
Like, those characters are precious, right? Oh, and so, and
100%.
I know it, like, and we've talked about it before, it always blows people's mind a little bit that I always say, put something of your, just something about you in the description itself. And I remember you even asked, you're like, why do you do that? And it's like, because sometimes that description is separate from your bio. So if you can, and on the organizing committee, the program committee, so if you can, like, just put a little bit of extra credibility in there. It's just like, oh, not only is it this interesting topic, but this person who's qualified to speak about it. That's why I think it's so important to put it in the description. But those takeaways, yeah, you can't go crazy on it. But I have yet to find, I literally have not seen a conference submission form where there's been a character limit on the takeaways.
Those are helpful constraints though. And I find as someone who has a tendency to overwrite, you know, to kind of clear my throat for a few paragraphs, as my friend Tom Barnes says about me, that, you know, okay, you have 100 characters for this and 250 characters for that. Like, doing that is a practice and a worthy practice.
It is. And I have the site wordcounter.net on my bookmark bar.
Yeah.
Because it's regularly how I check the length of my descriptions. And I was so excited this week when, picking up from our conversation last week, when Jen actually sent me a new conference that's coming out, and she said, "Hey, there's this conference. It seems up your alley. Do you want to submit?" And it was just the form, and I was so delighted that I had already done all the work, because I keep this Evernote. Like, yeah. I had the one sentence description. I had the short, the longer description. I had the takeaways. I even had who this was supposed to be for, written out.
And Jen
Montfort, she is the Tamsin Whisperer. She's officially director of business operations for the Red Thread and all things Tamsin. But Tamsin Whisperer is pretty much the most accurate thing. And I was delighted because I hadn't done this on purpose, but I think following the pattern that we've talked about before about writing these descriptions, it lends itself very well to the whatever the word limit was. I just have to tell you this. I was so excited. There's a hundred word limit, and I took my pre-written description and dropped it into Word Counter, and it was 99 words. And I'm like, yes! I'm so excited.
So just end it with a question mark, and you're done.
Well, it was 99 words. Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, but your point about the constraints are useful is that it actually forces you into clarity because if it had come in at 150, I would have had to figure out what do I cut to get down there. But generally these days I try to make sure that my descriptions are already 100 words or less, because increasingly that's the word limit. Or the character limit is like 500 or 750, and you start getting pretty creative with that. But I also feel it's pretty important with how you write descriptions and even those actionable takeaways to put some personality into them. But so those takeaways, just they can do so much for you because A, they're a way to, like, as we've talked about, sneak additional information in about your talk. B, allow you to put some more personality in there. But the third thing that I really think they allow you to do is to make sure that you have a mental roadmap that you have put forward about what that talk's actually going to be about. And that's why it's so important that you've done the work to figure out what the talk is about beforehand, because we've talked about this before. The worst experience is going back and go, oh, that is not what this talk is actually going to be about. I wrote it 6 months ago, and yikes.
Yeah, and I think it's a great moment to introduce this week's real hero of speaking. And we talked a bit about you know, having actionable takeaways for every kind of speech, a how talk, a what now talk, and a why talk. And I think our friend Brian Fenzo does that pretty well, because he has he can do a how talk. He can tell you, you know, tips to do great social video, but it all backs up into one big actionable thing.
Yeah. His one big actionable thing, and I will risk the E for this, but he's very well known for the phrase of press the damn button. But the other phrase that he's really good at is think like a fan. So I think in both cases, what Brian does that I think that is consistent with what we talk about, which what makes a great Freenote and in Brian's case, a great keynote because he is a paid keynoter. And to our talk on getting the gigs too, he's represented by an agent, one of the best out there, Michelle Joyce. So she's just give her a shout out too. But Brian is really good about that one big shift that he's asking people to make. Go get started, right? Press the damn button. Or think like a fan. Stop thinking about what you're trying to tell people and think about if you're a fan, like, what do they want to do? And I think that he does a great job of taking what otherwise would be kind of one of those tipsy talks that we talked about before, where it's just full of tips that are not connected to each other and therefore don't stick. He does a great job of taking even up to 10 of those, which is pushing it, but they're all variations on that theme. So he has a couple great talks, and he's probably going to roll his eyes when he discovers that the one that I've selected is the one he's been doing at Digital Summits lately, which is 10 marketing lessons to learn from the Fyre Festival. So if anyone's not familiar with it, that's that music festival that wasn't
most expensive cheese sandwich in history.
Yeah, exactly. So it was, and there's two great documentaries about it. And props to Brian because he took this thing that was very of the moment, and you know, in less intelligent and less thoughtful hands, this would have just been like a convenient hook for how to talk about how not to do things. But what I actually really love about this particular talk that Brian does is that he finds the good in what some of what they were trying to do, and he makes those kind of sub points really relatable to his audience. Because the other thing that Brian is really great at, in addition to getting people to do video content and all of that, is really helping companies bridge the gap with millennials and different generations. And so, you know, he does a great job even by putting all the takeaways like on a single slide in his talk, where he summarizes at the end what those big points were. But even if you just talk about, even in the context of what we talked about so far, like the first one is create experiences you can deliver on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of, you know, but that's a very, you know, that's an actionable takeaway, right? It's not a how-to step one, step two, step three, but it implies a very specific question. If we have promised this, can we deliver on it? And that's a very specific thing that somebody in that audience can come back and take away from.
Yeah. And all of those resolve up to a vigorous action statement, not, you know, understand this.
Right.
They absolutely all resolve to a vigorous action statement.
Yeah, I mean, so, and another one that he has is a, you know, simple call to action with video works, right? That you know, he pointed out that as much as the festival itself was a failure, the promotion of it was spectacular. And a huge amount of that was that they had this beautiful video that painted a wonderful picture, had a very specific, very simple call to action. And that worked. And that's one of those kind of counterintuitive, surprising things that Brian pulls out of this lesson of, you know, hey, this other piece failed because they didn't create an experience they could deliver on, but they did this other thing that you can do, which is create a simple, powerful video with a very simple call to action. And that's going to work in your favor.
So, so that's this week's real hero of speaking, Brian Fanzo, the Fyre Festival. I had just one thing I wanted. I just heard this recently. So, the Fyre Festival, you know, look it up. FYRE, giant fiasco. People paid for a thing, and not only did not get that thing, they had to wade through a lot of crap.
Almost literally,
when they got to this horrendously under-equipped island. And one of the faces of the Fyre Festival, one of the, you know, the real kind of celebrity promoter behind it was a rapper named Ja Rule. And I just recently saw him do a commercial for not TurboTax, but a local Newark tax preparation company. And I thought, okay,
shoot
for the stars.
Ja.
Yeah. A, I thought shoot for the stars, and B, that's exactly who I want doing my taxes. So shout out to Ja Rule. Our W-9s and W-4s and 1099s are on their way to you. And we're sending them via paper plane because that's this week's cocktail.
It Mine's gone.
Mine is too. And well, and here's the thing, like, you know, for people who stick around to this point, and for those who don't, Larry Rosen, we love you. Shout out to Larry. But if you do stick around for the cocktail part,
we should put like one extra, like super juicy takeaway after the cocktail.
Yes.
To keep people listening.
Or everything we just said was a lie. Good night.
Let's tell them about the paper plane.
We're going to tell them about the paper plane. And usually when we record the show, I will mix the cocktail, put it down in front of us. We'll do the show. And by the time we get to this segment, there's at least some of that cocktail left. There is none of it left for either one of us.
It's delicious.
It's because it's delicious. And it was new to both of us. And it was from our favorite barkeep, Sterling Jackson, at the Avery Bar at the Ritz-Carlton. Shout out, Sterling.
Again, we're not rich. We're just lazy because it's a block and a half away.
It's a block and a half away. And she just put this on the menu. And it is a bourbon drink that is so drinkable and so non-bourbon-y and sort of indescribable. It's fruity, but not sweet.
Yeah, it's like round. A gateway bourbon drink.
It is. It's a gateway, but it's super complex.
Yeah.
I've never really had a drink like
it. You know, it's like a Cosmo if you're a brown drink person.
Yeah, but it's also like it's not as sweet as a Cosmo by any stretch. Because the main components of it are bitters.
That's true.
Actually,
yeah. That's true. Yeah, but there is something bizarrely sweet about it. But there's nothing really sweet in it.
There's nothing sweet in it. There's some. So the components of the paper plane. It is a bourbon drink, but it is so easy to make. It is equal parts, and you know, for the two of us, I've used an ounce and a half of everything. So that's 6 ounces cut into 3 ounce drinks.
Like what?
What? I know. What?
Didn't look that big, honey.
Served in a big gulp inside a sack.
So 6 ounces between the two of us.
Yes,
so
between the two of us.
3 ounces each.
Yes, okay. But if I were having it by myself, I might do an ounce, an ounce, an ounce, and an ounce.
Yeah.
And so it's equal parts bourbon, and we've used Buffalo Trace because that's what we've had.
And you should have it in your bar.
Yeah, it's a great staple.
Because you made the TNT.
That's right.
Which else?
Didn't you?
Yep.
Ingrates. Yeah, so an ounce of bourbon, an ounce of fresh squeezed lemon juice.
Which you should have from many of our drinks.
Which you should have from today because you just squeezed it.
That's right. I know. Always have lemons.
Always have lemons. When life hands you lemons, make a paper plane.
That's right. Yes.
But the rest of it, so an ounce of bourbon, an ounce of lemon juice, an ounce of Aperol. And Aperol...
Of the spritz.
Of the spritz, yeah. It falls into the sort of...
It's an aperitivo.
It's an aperitivo. Yeah. And you know, aperitivos and amaros, which is really the second ingredient here, all sort of fall into a category of bitters. And if you've ever like shaken bitters into a drink or seen that, imagine that only like you could drink a glass of it. And they're not dissimilar to aperitif that you might have in France as well, like Lillette or something like that.
Yeah.
They're akin to vermouths and wines and fortified
drinks.
What's
interesting to me though isn't that Aperol, much like Lillette, is a pre-dinner digestif, which is also the known. But the amaro is actually a post.
Yes,
and you can usually tell the difference. Just fun fact, pro tip, based on the color. Like the pre drink, the pre dinner, pre food liqueurs and cocktails like Lillet, Campari, Aperol tend to be light, bright.
Yeah,
and then the ones you're supposed to drink after, like Montenegro,
Nonino,
all of those are darker, richer. Fernet would fall into that category, yep. All of those things. So what's interesting to me about this drink is that it has both of those because it has both Aperol and
Nonino
yeah, in it.
And Amaro.
It's delicious. I don't know. It's
hard to describe.
It's
hard to describe.
If you know bourbon, you're definitely going to taste the bourbon in it. And if you expect it to be only bourbon, you might not like that,
yeah.
But it's actually a really interesting, complex, lovely drink.
It's delicious. So an ounce of bourbon, ounce of lemon juice, ounce of Aperol, and an ounce of an Amaro. We use Nonino, which is classic for this. And you shake it and shake it and shake it until the shaker gets all frosty and the drink comes out frothy.
And remind us how we know whether we should shake or stir.
If it's got fruit juice in it, you shake it. If it doesn't, you stir it.
Yes. And we recently got a cocktail pitcher and we love it.
We did. We got a proper cocktail pitcher and a big long swirly spoon, which we didn't use for this drink.
No. So we'll talk about the next time we use a swirly spoon cocktail pitcher drink.
And we may do that the next time on the next week's episode of The Freenoter.
Let's do that.
On next week's episode of The Freenoter, we're going to look at alternate ways to spread your message, including the TEDx talk. Is that the right choice for you?
We'll look at one of the speakers that I coached for TEDx Cambridge, which is the oldest locally organized TED Talk event in the world.
And we're going to debut a cocktail that we quasi-invented, which we call the Spectre for you James Bond fans.
Mm-hmm. All that and more on next week's episode of The Freenoter.
Cheers.
Cheers.